future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lindt.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Play, an industry-leading content provider of slots, live casino, bingo, and virtual sports. Pragmatic Play excels at creating an immersive, engaging, and mobile-focused experience for players with over 200 HTML5 games that are available in all currencies, 31 languages, and all major certified markets. Discover more at pragmaticplay.com.
Returning to iGaming Next Valletta's beloved home, the world-leading Mediterranean Conference Center, this year promises to be the biggest, best, and most valuable edition yet of the most exciting show in the industry. Get ready to connect, explore, and experience at iGaming Next Valletta 22 this 27th through 29th September.
My absolutely favorite event of the year.
And BP3, take three of the podcasts long awaited by you and me, Bill. The first time we had some issues over at your side. The second time we lost the recording. But third time's a charm. Now we're here together. And I'm looking forward to a fantastic discussion with you, BP3. But first of all, how are you doing today?
Pierre, I couldn't be better. And I really am grateful and appreciative of you giving me the opportunity to speak with you. I adore you. I adore iGaming Next. You guys are phenomenal, and what you've accomplished in a very short period of time is quite extraordinary.
That's amazing to hear, BP3. And don't build up my confidence too much here, because my team will pull me right back down again. But I appreciate the nice feedback here. So listen, Bill. Obviously, you are a thought leader in the North American iGaming and online sports betting space. And if you ever visit a conference in North America, it is not the conference if BP3 is not there. And same goes on the European side. You're a regular speaker, a regular thought leader at these conferences, and it's always great to have your insights here. So today we're going to talk about kind of the insights into the future of the North American market. Always dynamic, always a lot of things happening. So I suppose my first question to you, Bill, is can you give us kind of the current state of play of the North American market from your perspective?
Yeah, you know, Pierre, I remember when I went to my first conference outside of America 13 years ago in London. Look, I was typically, for the most part of my career up until that point, a brick-and-mortar lobbyist. And I remember talking about the power of online and mobile. And it's amazing what's happened in the last 13 years. Whether it's exchange wagering in America, online, mobile, casino, poker, online sports betting, and now fixed odds horse racing, which you guys like shrug at because you've had it in Europe forever. America is way behind the times, but we're playing catch up. I think the state of the industry is very strong and vibrant, despite the fact that the capital markets and the stock exchanges have not been very favorable lately, and that has a lot to do with external factors like geopolitics, supply chain, wars, etc. We're not here to talk about all that. And the Biden administration's had a tough time getting things stabilized in terms of spiking inflation. Although gas prices starting to come down, and I think that affects across the board all of the verticals, including ours. We have seven states in America that have online poker and casino. I would have thought, and I actually predicted years ago, that we'd have more than a dozen by now. It's been a little slow. A lot of politics has to do with that. But the sports betting vertical, both mobile and retail, is exploding. We have over 36 states that have passed it. 30 plus the District of Columbia already launched. You have Virginia and Maryland and Ohio and Massachusetts now, which I've worked very hard in. And, of course, we'll talk a little bit later about the crown jewel There's really a gold, a bronze, and a silver, and the gold crown jewel is California. Texas and Florida, obviously, 2 and 3. Florida's stumbled. I think Texas is going to go next year. They're out of session this year. But California, the world's eyes are on right now.
Right, right. Interesting. You mentioned that only a handful of states have legalized online gambling so far, so in terms of casino, poker, and so on. What's your expectations going forward? Do you now anticipate that there will be more states opening up for online gambling? For example, the New York State Senator Joseph P. Adabo has been very adamant and vocal that he believes that it's only a matter of time before online gambling comes to the state of New York, for example. Do you agree with this? Are there other states that will follow suit, or do you think that the progression will be a bit slower as it's been so far?
Well, a credit to you. I was privileged to be invited by you to be on the panel moderating Senator Adabo, who's a dear friend and a great guy, and he loves you, and iGaming Next. He broke the news at your conference in May that he's not only going to lower the tax rate, which I've been lobbying for, he's also going to introduce a bill and push for it, and he's the man for casino poker online in New York. That happening is going to affect all the other states in the region. You know, of course, Pennsylvania and New Jersey already have it. I think next year, where a lot of states will come back into session, will continue considering it. I do think it's going to be a slow grind, slower than I would have liked and expected. But now that sports betting is starting to push off, I mean, there's only 14 states that won't have it right now of any sort. Now the industry can double down. And I will say this, Pierre, not to be too long-winded. One of the things I said 13 years ago in London when I spoke at that conference, and I know far more than I knew now than I knew then, is America can't hold a candle to most of the rest of the world, Australia and Europe and Israel in particular, in terms of online gaming, right? And we're way behind the times. However, all those other areas, Australia, Israel, all of Europe, they have been playing catch up on lobbying, politics. It's very different in America than it is everywhere else. Now, some would say, well, that's my business and that's why I promote that. But the case is, if you don't come together as an industry and try to push forward on some top line messaging, what happens? FanDuel goes in one day, then DraftKings, then Caesars, then BetMGM, then PointsBet, then PlayUp, and so on and on. And the messages are conflicting. We're better off coming together, lobbying as an industry to show the value. Why is online gaming important, whether it's sports, casino, or poker? Because it's hugely important to tramp down on gambling addiction. It's the most important tool you can use for RG. Number two, it's jobs and tax revenue. And every state that's had it can prove that. And finally, if you don't do it, it's going to the black market. It's happening anyway. So why don't you try to capture that? And I think we have work to do on that vein.
Right, right. I mean, it's a great point, Bill. Looking at it from a European perspective, we've never had really good industry representation on a lobbyist point of view here in Europe. There are some scattered industry organizations here that are representing some of the operators, but there's no united front on the European side that is lobbying for the industry that has a strong voice towards the regulators. Whereas in the United States, obviously you have the American Gaming Association with a lot of legacy, and that is working on a united front in order to lobby for the industry as a whole. I mean, it's a pretty odd situation that the operators and the major players in the European side has not been able to come together. I don't know. Like, what do you think? I mean, why is it that the Americans are so much better united than the Europeans?
Well, I mean, I would put it a little differently. I think the European community industry has not had to deal with the very sometimes dodgy and difficult, challenging American political system, right? It's different. Our system is different. Mm-hmm. And so I still believe we're playing catch up. Listen, the American Gaming Association was a brick and mortar only industry until a few years ago. Right. They were against online sports betting. They were against online gaming. I lobbied against them. I respect the industry. The leadership there is good and solid. But since the demise of Donald Trump and the demise of Sheldon Adelson, God rest his soul, the AGA has been able to come out because Sands and Adelson really had a big grip on the AGA. That's now starting to change. The funny thing about life is most of the industry is younger, your age in that milieu. You know, I'm 57 years old. I'm an old man. But they don't understand history. Nobody today would believe that the AGA was against online gaming, right? Like, why did they change their opinion? It's important that they're involved, that they're engaged, and that they're committed to doing it. But they're a better organization for federal legislation than they are for state-by-state legislation. And as you know, there's not a lot of federal legislation other than UEGA and the Wire Act and the Tribal Gaming Act. So there's not a lot really there. The AGA can play a significant role at continuing to unite and use a megaphone to get out to the industry. That's why, and this is no bullshit, your organization is so important to come to North America because you are educating regulators and legislators about what the global market looks like. You're playing a pivotal role. It's the third rail and very important to moving this industry forward to the next level.
Awesome, Bill. Let's move over to the state of California for a moment. So I was in San Francisco visiting my sister a couple of months ago here after I came back to New York. And I found myself watching Fox News, as you do as a European, because you're very curious about what's going on in American politics from both sides of the aisles, let's say. And during the commercial break, this was back in May, a commercial from that was sanctioned by the local Indian tribes was basically throwing shade at this proposition number 27, which is part of the voting referendum here in November, which is trying to legalize online sports betting. This is expected to be one of the biggest kind of political battles in Californian politics, whether or not online sports betting is going to be legalized. And at the same time, retail sports betting, the proposition number 26, which is led by the local Indian tribes. You know, can you give a little bit more context on what is going on in California at the moment? What are the expectations from this referendum in November? And just generally, again, what's the state of play in California? What's at stake here, really?
Yeah, that's a great question. So just a little context. California is the eighth largest economy in the world. It's the largest right. state in the nation by far. Texas is number two, Florida's number three, New York's number four. So the three largest states have no online sports betting or gaming at all. Texas has no gaming, right? The Hard Rock has a relationship with the state, the Seminole Tribes, where they have a few casinos, so they have a lock on the market. I think the Hard Rock's ultimately going to be successful in Florida. Let's talk about California. It takes a massive undertaking, Pear, to get a ballot referendum initiative proposition onto the ballot. Tens of millions of dollars were spent by the tribes and the industry to get Prop 26, the Tribal Gaming Initiative, which is retail only. And tens of millions of dollars were spent by the industry, you know, the typical top 10 operators from FanDuel, DraftKings on down, you know, MGM. Points Bet, etc., Barstool, Penn National, Caesars, to get it on the ballot. So the both initiatives were just qualified in July to go onto the ballot. So they're on the ballot. The industry-backed initiative is retail and mobile. It would allow for interplay with the tribes. The tribal initiative is tribal only, retail only. The tribes are opposing the industry-backed initiative. The industry-backed initiative has been silent on the tribal side. I would have thought, and I tried unsuccessfully, I would have thought that the industry and the tribes would come together. The tribes have more power in that state than they do any other state in the nation. And for that matter, just to be fair, because this is important for the folks that are operating and those that are startups that are thinking about operating, there are no federally recognized tribes in New Jersey. We didn't have these issues. There's no card rooms in New Jersey. It was the online industry versus the casino industry in Atlantic City. We cut a deal, we got it done. I am very involved in California. Governor Gavin Newsom is a good friend, a smart guy. You know, he's just recalled last year, and he successfully got reelected in a recall election. California is a very liberal state, very democratic state, but already the industry has spent, on top of the tens of millions they spent to get Prop 27 on the ballot, they've spent $60 million in television ads. I'm sure you saw them. You were just kibitzing about it. They've gone backwards. It's 33% in favor of the ballot referendum and about 60% opposed with a 7% undecided. That's terrible. And it's not about spending more money. It's about spending the money wisely. The bulk of the benefits, the taxes, the licensing fees, go to help the homeless. California has a huge homeless crisis, right? They're not talking about that. They're shitting on the tribes. Also, yeah, the tribes are spending huge money opposing Prop 27 and supporting their own initiative. If the election were held today, both ballot referendums, I think, would fail. So there's a lot of work to be done. I'm flying out to California in early September. I don't want to talk about who's sending me and all that, but I'm meeting with Governor Gavin Newsom to talk about how we can right the ship. Final point. The California Democratic Party, which is one of the most powerful Democratic parties in the country and the largest, had their convention 3 weeks ago, opposed Prop 27, neutral on Prop 26. The NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in America, powerful organization. Blacks represent about 18% of the voting bloc in California. They're opposed to it. The California Teachers Union opposed it. And a whole bunch of other various... They have not done their job. All they did, the industry-backed initiative, was spend money to get it on a ballot. But that's only a small piece of the puzzle. You want to hug people. You want to talk to people. You want to educate people. And there's not a lot of time. We are 90 days away from today, from Election Day.
Right. So at the moment, there's not that much speaking for Prop 27 to actually go through it. And in other words, like, do you think is there, like, you mentioned here, you're meeting Governor Nunes here. I mean, is there a chance? I mean, what needs to be done in order to these are powerful organizations that are opposing this proposition. Is there any way to turn the ship?
It's hard. It's going to be a Herculean task. I know I was just up in Boston with the head of, Jason, head of DraftKings, who said, you know, it's great what's happening in Massachusetts. Hopefully it'll cross the goal line, and then it did. But we'll double down. We're spent $100 million. We'll spend another $100 million. He's put all his eggs in the California basket, which I don't believe was wise. However, I respect him, and I respect his company. They need to run a different campaign. There's time to turn the ship, but as each day passes, it's not just about spending money, it's about spending it wisely.
Yeah.
They need to get involved. Look, here's the problem, Pierre. recent poll that was released last week, where I just referenced 33 opposed, 60 in 33 in favor, 60 opposed to the ballot Prop 27, right? So it's not, it's very hard when you only have a 7% undecided, and a majority of the people, 78% of people, know it's on the ballot. Okay. So it's not like you have to educate them that it's on the ballot. You have to explain, why should we do this? Jobs, tax revenue, the homeless, stop shitting on the tribes, let them shit on you, let them go, because you're only pissing people off, and you need to run a more, what I would call, powerful, impactful campaign. It's not about just spending money on ads. You got to get into the streets. You got to make sure you get your supporters to the polls, because it's going to be a very turnout election, very low turnout election.
Okay, okay. And is there any room, say that this the proposition is the proposition 27 is not voted through? Is there any way to negotiate with the tribes for future referendums in order to create a proposition that that the online industry and the tribes can vote together on, so to say? Like, can you turn the tides, and can you get these organizations to work together? Do you have any insights there? Like, what's the mindset of the of the tribes? They want to protect the revenue, of course, but
You? I do. I've been asked, Pierre, by both sides to get involved formally. I've been playing a very behind-the-scenes role to try to bring people together, because I like to do that. I think the industry needs to realize tribal gaming is different. You don't have that anywhere else in the world for the most part, or really anything similar. There's history, there's politics, there's racism, there's tribalism, there's local issues. What I would say is, my father, who's an elected official in America, right, and he's run many campaigns, he would always be careful, and he always won. He's never lost a campaign. He's a member of Congress for 30 years. He was a mayor. He was a state legislator. He was always careful about the way he talked about his opponent. And why is that? Because people are going to vote for his opponent, and then he has to represent those people after the election. So if you think you're going to win by crushing your opponent, the tribes are still going to have power. So I would say, begin the conversations now before you lose, because the tribes have massive political juice in California, number one. Number two, they're not yet comfortable with mobile betting. Online betting. They're not comfortable. They're nervous about it. But there's a better conversation to take place. And let me do it this way. You don't walk into the room with any tribal leaders like this. You walk in humble, and you explain to them the power of online gaming and what it could do for the tribes. That's how you do it.
Right. Their mindset is they are simply scared of disrupting the status quo, let's say. They don't want to take the risk of entering an agreement and it doesn't turn out as they had hoped, let's say. They don't understand the industry. Is that the issue?
Yes, spot on. Totally. Totally. It's education and advocacy in a smart way that's respectful of what the tribes represent.
All right. Fair enough. So yes, let's see here what is going to happen in the next coming months. Perhaps the online industry, the consortium here of the operators, are able to turn the ship around. But as you mentioned here, it doesn't look very great, at least so far. But who knows? We're in the gambling industry. We know better than anyone that the game is not over until the river hits the table. Let's say, if we travel south. To Texas, you mentioned earlier in the conversation here that you think there is a potentially a good chance that Texas will come over the line, if I understood you correctly. Can you talk more about what is next for Texas, and how do you think the state of Texas will play out?
So Pierre, Texas has no legalized gaming at all. No casinos. You know, no poker rooms, none of that. Typically, people go across the border into Colorado or Oklahoma to gamble, right? Or over to Arizona, New Mexico, whatever. Governor Abbott, who's a really good guy, he's very conservative. I'm a Democrat, he's a Republican, but he is very interested in doing this. He's up for re-election. Beto O'Rourke, who's a very nationally known guy who ran for president, he ran for U.S. Senate against Ted Cruz. He's running for governor. The polling doesn't look too great for him right now, but there's a lot going on between guns and abortion. And, you know, the FBI just raided Mar-a-Lago yesterday, as I'm sure you've heard.
Right.
So
yes.
So Donald Trump's whole home in Mar-a-Lago was ransacked by the FBI yesterday. And that's not easy to do, because in order for the FBI to go into someone's private home, a federal judge has to approve it.
Right.
And don't forget, the director of the FBI was Donald Trump's appointee.
Right. Yes.
So, okay. So all that being said, I met with Abbott last year where he was trying to get this done. It wasn't so successful. The Texas legislature, Pierre, which is very odd, a lot of Europeans like scratch their head when I say this, they meet biannually. So this year, there's no legislature. Next year, there is, and they meet for about 4 to 5 months. So, you know, we're working behind the scenes to get a bill teed up. You have everybody from Tillman Fertitta, the owner of Golden Nugget, now partnered with DraftKings, who's very close to the governor and has massive operations, including he's the owner of the Houston Rockets. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Mark Cuban. All those folks have been working behind the scenes delicately to tee this up for next year. So around January, February, March, we should see a bill drop, and then things play out. As Donald Trump's power continues to diminish, that makes it more likely that states like Texas and Alabama and Mississippi will do online mobile betting, because don't forget, Trump came out publicly against it because it's being bought out by Candid. So Sean, Trump is starting to go this way. This is historic that a former president, that's some other time on what that's all about, but that's the shot fired across the globe because everybody's focused on it. I think Texas is very likely to get something done next year. It's not 100%. I give it a 70-30 chance of passing. I'm not very optimistic today about California, but I do think there's opportunity to turn and right the ship. And then, of course, Florida's stuck in the federal courts because of the deal that the Hard Rock struck with Governor DeSantis. And we're probably a year and a half away from that getting settled.
Right. And I want to jump into to Florida, in fact. So as you mentioned, it's a bit of a gridlock in Florida at the moment, where for a short period of time, Hard Rock essentially had a monopoly on online sports betting in Florida. And the rumors were, obviously, Hard Rock is not a publicly traded company, so we don't know exactly how the efforts in Florida went. But the rumor through the grapevine is that they were doing extremely well for this short period of time in the state of California during that kind of monopoly era that they have. But what comes next for Florida? What do you believe? So if we will continue to see this battle between Hard Rock and the Seminole tribes together versus the rest of the online gambling industry in North America. What do you think? You mentioned earlier in the conversation you think that it will perhaps continue as a monopoly if the state opens up. What's your thoughts on Florida, Bill?
Yeah, listen, full disclosure, Jim Allen and the Hard Rock International, not just in America, are clients of mine.
Okay.
Governor DeSantis, who used to be a member of Congress, served one, you know, with my dad. My dad knows him. They don't care for each other because DeSantis is a Republican. My dad's a Democrat. I just give you that by way of background. And my father would cringe if he heard me say this, but I like to be very, you know me, I'm straight up. I don't beat around the bush. Governor DeSantis, although I disagree with his politics, is a very smart, nimble, and powerful man. Okay. Governor DeSantis right now is lighting candles for Merrick Garland. Because if Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States of America, takes down Donald Trump, that's a big favor for DeSantis.
Right.
DeSantis has to be careful because he wants to ultimately get Trump's supporters. He doesn't want to look like he's favoring this. That's number one. Ron DeSantis is extraordinarily good at what he does. And he cut a deal with Jim Allen, who, by the way, before sports betting was even on the radar, the Seminoles have a state compact for decades with Florida. So you can only gamble retail at Hard Rock facilities on tribal gaming property in Florida. And then the Hard Rock gives what's called a pilot payment in lieu of taxes to the state. So DeSantis said, hey, why should I shake up the earth? The tribes have had this, you want to call it monopoly, but exclusivity. I'll just give it to them. The little caveat here, and I'm not going to be very popular because most people don't agree with this, but that's okay. I've been wrong before, but I think I'm right here. DeSantis disagrees with the other industry members, all of which I've mentioned, some of whom are clients, who are filing the federal lawsuit on the interpretation of the Indian Gaming Act. That interpretation is being done by the federal courts. If the federal courts do not permit what DeSantis and Jim Allen want to do, they have another way to go about it. They can amend the act. So, you know, I mean, listen, I don't fault the rest of the industry for filing a lawsuit because they would have been shut out of Florida, okay? And some would say, well, they should have a shot at it. Well, look, if they were in the same position, they'd do the same darn thing that the Hard Rock's doing. And there's a lot of history and legacy there. So I think that ultimately they're going to succeed in the courts, but if they don't, then it's a battle at the congressional level.
Right. Really interesting, Bill, to hear the insights here on these couple of states. I want to zoom out a bit, you know, speaking about legislation in different states. Vixio released a report a week ago, stating that the U.S. states are leaving billions of tax revenue on the table, considering that many of the states are specifically not allowing iGaming, than online gambling. And they make the case that if the entire United States would allow online gambling, you would see a $6.35 billion tax revenue increase, essentially. And this has been shared quite a lot throughout the industry. And also, they point out the fact that the states that are currently allowing online gambling are generating a lot more tax revenue, only those few states, than the online sports betting states are doing combined. So there's like 35 or 30 states are generating a lot less tax revenue than the six states that are currently allowing online gambling. I don't know if this is a irrelevant or stupid question, let's say, but is there a way to kind of lobby on that level, on like federal level, to at some point legalize as a blanket space online gambling, or is this always going to be a state by state case question?
Okay. I love the question. It's not a stupid question. It's a very smart question. But I want to, as I always do, I like to tell a story before I kind of get into the weeds. When I was lobbying for online gambling in the first state in New Jersey, Caesars approached me. I don't want to mention names because I don't want to offend anybody. But they're friends of mine, but we were not friends at the time. Caesars approached me and said, Bill, could you please stand down and wait because we're trying to pass a federal law? And I said to them, you know, it's interesting. I know you think I'm just kind of this silly guy that's crazy and, you know, out there and maybe can speak well, but maybe I'm not that smart. My father's a sponsor of that bill in the legislature, okay? And I guarantee you something. You haven't done your job because historically, the federal government has given certain issues to the states. Automobile insurance, flood insurance, and gambling. It's always been regulated at the state level. Now you want to have a federal... I mean, if the federal government got involved with the online gaming industry, and this is where people don't get it, and I get very crazy about this, it would be a disaster. Yeah, you might have it across the globe. It would be a disaster. Now, the good news for me is the federal government can't get their tail out of their way. They barely can get stuff done. A tribute to Biden, you know, he killed the number two in Al-Qaeda. You know, Nancy Pelosi was just over in Taiwan. They got four major pieces of legislation on healthcare and climate change and inflation to fight inflation. But that's an anomaly. I think there's little chance we'll ever get a federal law. And I would say the industry needs to smarten up, because why would you want a federal law? You have more control and a better determination by going state by state and proving yourselves. The states in America are known, if you look at any political history or federal doctrines, the Federalist Papers, the states are the crucible for experimentation at the federal level. Leave us alone, federal government. Let us continue. I mean, New Jersey and Governor Murphy and the Republicans in New Jersey would be totally against it. Governor Hochul in New York would be totally against it. Governor Wolf, because you'd be taking away their control over an issue. And those taxes should be at the state level, not at the federal level. The problem is that VIXI study is not in the right hands. It's not as important to share it with you and me. You should be sharing it in the right way with proper people, to legislators and governors. That's how to get it done.
Right. Do you think there is, like, if you make that case and you show the legislators black and white that they are missing out on this tax revenue, do they listen to this, or is it too much politics involved, too many stakeholders involved that are powerful with other business interests? That becomes more important than, say, the tax revenue argument.
This you're like making me so happy because this is my world, and I oftentimes explain. Like I had explained, Pierre, to a client of mine that you know very well, publicly traded company out of Australia. You know, Australia has, you know, a couple of different states, but it's not. I mean, it's a big landmass, but it's a small population. You know, New York is bigger population-wise than all of Australia, certainly California's. But they would ask me, the leadership of this public company, Bill, we're going to do fixed odds horse racing. Why do we have to go state by state? I said, because that's the way you want to get it done. If you want to go the federal government route, it may never happen. I guarantee you, we'll get it done in a few states, it'll catch on, and then we'll get it done in a few more. And so the beauty of it is, if you start out properly, it doesn't happen overnight. Legislation, you don't drop it and 2 days later it passes. It's got to go through committees. It's got to go through public hearings. It's got to go through a floor vote. Then it's got to get to the executive's desk. That often takes time, right? So if you wanted to, for example, bring online casino and poker to pick a state, whatever, Virginia, you wouldn't start in January. You'd start today, teeing it up so that the bill could be dropped and moved in the next session. And oftentimes people just get frustrated and want, like, the quickest path, the path of least resistance. They need to hire an expert that knows a little bit about government and politics and regulatory affairs in order to move the dial. And so that's my opinion.
Fair enough, Bill. You know, changing subject a bit, I want to talk about the path to profitability. This is the $1 billion question, let's say. Since the markets had a downturn, top line growth is no longer the priority from the shareholders. It's rather the question of when will the publicly traded companies be profitable. And the guidance that we've seen from DraftKings, from FanDuels and others is they want to see profitability by 2023. I think DraftKings communicated end of 2023, whereas FanDuel is more like in the beginning of 2023. And Q2 is an interesting quarter because Q1 was a very expensive quarter for the online sports betting operators. Obviously, you have Super Bowl, you have March Madness, American football taking place at that time. Whereas Q2 is traditionally, from an American point of view, not really an active quarter for sports. And so we saw DraftKings quarterly report coming out yesterday where they were actually able to increase revenue in Q2 compared to the very active Q1. And at the same time, they were able to decrease the EBITDA loss. They made an EBITDA loss of $118 million versus an EBITDA loss of $289 million in Q1. This seems to be quite positive numbers, but still quite far away from being EBITDA positive. So my question to you, Bill, is what's your expectations here? Do you get the feeling as well that the guidance is going to come true? 2023 will be the year where we see the major online sports betting and online gambling operators turning a profit. What's your expectations here? And this is not investment advice, by the way. I'll say it for you.
It's not what?
It's not investment advice, let's say.
But, Of course.
Wink, wink.
By no means. Yeah, by no means is this investment. I'm not an investment advisor. Thank you for disclosing. Look, I have immense respect for all the major operators. I have a lot of respect for the startups, too. I don't think, I hope, but I don't believe, and I feel strongly about this, that they're going to be profitable in the very near future. And what I'm meaning by that is I don't see it happening for any of the companies by the end of 23.
Oh, well, I'll take
massive, it. Yeah, massive spend on bonus bets and player acquisition. Not a lot of investment on retention. Very little focus other than Entain and to a degree BetMGM on RG, which I think is critical, as you know, for the industry. Another piece of the puzzle is, let's take a company like DraftKings. Massive brand. Everybody in America knows DraftKings, whether you bet or you don't. Okay? It's like Entain or Ladbrokes, where you're from. However, they spent $1.3 billion last year to make $1 billion. Okay? I mean... The shareholders are becoming impatient. Their stock, not all through their own fault, has come way down. It's starting to taper off and trickle up. It takes so much time. The margins are too thin. But to their credit, all of them are now exploring something I'm working on, which sounds, Pierre, a little self-absorbed or minor, but we're talking about bringing 40,000 horse races into America to allow FanDuel and DraftKings and MGM and PlayUp and all the points bet, all the companies, Caesars, to utilize that so that when you have these downturns, like this time of year where really you only have baseball, right? There's nothing much, and golf and tennis. 40,000 races a year, you're talking about several thousand races a week that you could be putting onto your platform. They are now starting to look at those things. The sooner they look at it and embrace it and do it, the better, because that content will bring good profitability. And then there also needs to be a bit of work done on states like New York with the tax rate, which we are working on. And in addition to that, like, if you're only existing because of bonus bets, well, there's going to be an end of the runway soon. I also think that the companies need to think about innovation and more attention to their consumer-facing product, because the brand will run out of interest eventually.
Interesting. We started the conversation by talking about how so few states allow online gambling, in the sense of casino products and so on. And something I'm hearing more and more through the grapevines is that to mitigate the lack of the more profitable online gambling vertical, in states that are only allowing online sports betting, operators are trying to figure out how to produce products that are more more volatile, that are kind of giving you the similar experience as the online gambling products we do. So a good example here is the kind of the parlay betting on the same game, and I think that is contributing to the fact that DraftKings were able to increase the revenue in the second quarter, was just kind of product innovation and just creating exciting products that are kind of tailored for the more volatile gambler, let's say. So is that a bit of a key for the future for the operators, being able to generate revenue by this product innovation that are like getting closer and closer to touch the online gambling vertical without being classified as online gambling?
You see a lot of the operators exploring all types of different verticals, Entain and MGM with Unicorn, with esports. You see it with DraftKings and FanDuel, points bet play up with lottery, online lottery. All these different verticals are eventually going to intertwine, right? The sooner you get to market, the better. But the customer in America, and perhaps for the rest of the world, is not a loyal customer. You have people bouncing from bonus bet to bonus bet, right? So eventually, if you want to be profitable, you have to have some innovation that's going to be sticky and keep the customer. So yes, You answered the question yourself. It's a great question. I just think that these companies need to do three things. And if they do three things, it's not going to happen overnight. I think they will become profitable far sooner than if they continue down the path that they're on now. And those three things are, number one, first and foremost, you know what I'm going to say, they need to better embrace RG.
Responsible gambling.
They have to embrace it. Yeah, that's number one. Number two, they need to develop far better technology than they have. The technology's fine, but it needs to be better. It needs to be nimble. For example, innovation. The consumer-facing products for all of the operators is not really, there's no Latino consumer-facing product. There's no personalization for women. I mean, they're leaving like half the population out. We have almost 40 million Latinos in America, and yet there's no Spanish-speaking application. There's no Asian-speaking application. 10% of our population's Asian. There's no India-speaking app, and that's a good chunk of our population. All that. And then the third piece is they need to do a far better job with the way they interact with government. They handle those three things. These are not very expensive things to do, but it's a way to create a more sustainable, profitable industry.
Brilliant, Bill. I like all three points. They make a lot of sense. And I mean, to round things off here, Bill, you're a very busy man. You travel the country. You meet with the legislators. You meet with the state representatives. You are mantling the hero cape here of the entire industry in order to move it forward on the North American side. But what's next for BP3? What's your focus at the moment?
Well, one of the things that I was not successful with, I'm very proud of what I've done with exchange wagering. I'm proud of what I've done with online gaming, sports betting, repealing PASPA. I'm proud of what I just accomplished in the last 9 months with fixed odds horse racing. I'm proud of what I'm doing in esports. But I failed at bringing the industry together. And by the way, I put my coat on the hook and I've moved on. So now I'm just collaborating with a very small core bunch of people like you who get it and are smart, and hopefully people will add on. Integrity, compliance, and RG are a massive focus for me. I'm getting involved in a host of different verticals. And Pierre, I'll tell you something. I am blessed. I may complain now and then that I'm busy, but I get a chance to go to beautiful places like Malta, thanks to the work I'm doing in Australia and Copenhagen and South America, etc. I have no complaints, but the best is yet to come.
What a great way to finish the podcast today. Bill, I am looking forward to host you in Malta in September during IGME Next. And thank you so much for sharing this time with me today, giving us all the insights that you have for the North American industry. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks for the honor.
All right, BP3.